We didn't quite finish Mark chapter 1 last week as much as I'd like to. There are a few other couple things that we wanted to talk about. We were looking at the cleansing of the leper in Mark chapter 1, verses 40 through 45. This leper had been healed by Jesus. But one of the most remarkable things that we see here in verse 41, it says, "Then Jesus, moved with compassion, stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, I am willing to heal you. Be cleansed. Be cleansed." That is, yes.
There was one person that had leprosy that had to ask one of the people that had the powers and stuff, or else it was Jesus that told him to go down to some river and dunk yourself 7 times before he could be clean.
Right. Yeah, that's in the Old Testament. You're thinking of 2 Kings chapter 5. Yes, Naaman, a Syrian commander. Yeah, he had leprosy, and he approached Elisha, and Elisha's servant came out and told him what to do, and that, you're right, he was to dip in the Jordan River 7 times. And he did, and he was cleansed of his leprosy. He was cleaned of his leprosy. So it's not a unique thing to the New Testament, but it happens so many more times, a miraculous healing in the New Testament. Last week we also discussed that there was a certain expectation that certain kinds of biblical leprosy could have been cleansed, could have been healed, could have cleared up. And we do see that in Leviticus 14, that if they've been cleansed of their leprosy, then we have this particular ritual that we go through in Leviticus 14 to ritually cleanse the person of that leprosy, of that ritual impurity and uncleanness. But because we noted last week that that there was that ritual impurity, even if it was contagious in the way we think of it, medically contagious, it might not have been contagious in that way, but it was definitely contagious in terms of the ritual impurity, in the sense that, man, if you look at the Old Testament law and you see how one can be made unclean, it was all manner of things that could make one ritually unclean. We see that the woman's regular cycle made a woman unclean. We see that giving birth made a woman unclean. We could see that various forms of there was one passage, if you remember, that that Moses, well, the God told Moses in Numbers chapter 12, if someone had spit in Miriam's face, wouldn't she be unclean for a little while? Yeah, so just having that kind of bodily fluid, even spitting, could make one ritually unclean. This was something that was a problem, at least in terms of a religious issue that they had. It was easy to become ritually unclean. And yet Jesus deliberately touched this unclean man. You know, I don't know how long it had been since this man, this leper, had felt another human touch, but it must have been very welcome. Even if it was, you know, just another person. I don't know what that's like, to not have to be sequestered from humans so that you couldn't actually touch another human being. I don't know what that's like. But I can imagine it couldn't have been pleasant. Let's look at Haggai chapter 2. Verses 12 through 13. There's a question that I was wrestling with when I was studying this passage in Mark 1, that Jesus touched this leper. So then the question I had was, well, then did that make Jesus unclean? So let's take a look at Haggai chapter 2 real quick and see what Haggai has to say about that kind of thing.
I was just thinking that Jesus is the only one that could touch you.
Mm.
He's the only one that can save us. He's the only one that can save us. He's the only one.
It's almost like he has an immunity to it.
He has an immunity to sin. Because remember, the key thing about Christ, it says he was tempted and always like we were, yet was without sin. If he had been immune to sin, then he couldn't be our perfect sacrifice. So there's all kinds of things, and that's why you're going to check these verses out and understand what this notion of uncleanness meant.
Yeah. All right, so Haggai chapter 2. Haggai is giving an illustration here to help the people there understand the need to build the temple. And that's what his book is about. They were failing to build the temple, and he's trying to encourage the people to do so, rebuild the temple after the exile, after they come out of Babylon. Alright, so let's read verses 12 and 13. Whoever's got that, please.
If one carries holy meat in the fold of his garment, and with the edge he touches bread or stew, wine or oil, or any other food, will it become holy? Then the priest answered and said, no. And Haggai said, if anyone who is unclean because of a dead body touches any of these, will it become unclean? So the priest answered and said, it shall be unclean.
Alright, so this is an illustration that he's using. And he's trying to ask the people, if something holy touches something common, will the common thing become holy? No. If something were to touch something that is unclean, would that make that particular thing unclean? Yes. So holiness doesn't spread, but uncleanness does. So Jesus touches this particular person. Based on that principle, wouldn't that mean that then he would be unclean? It's remarkably easy for any person. In fact, I would find it very difficult to imagine Jesus going through his life without being ritually unclean at some point. Because of the... if you read Leviticus 15, that's really hard to imagine that anyone could go through this life without being ritually unclean. Does that mean that if someone is ritually unclean that they have sinned? No, it does not. Even though sometimes, as we read last week in Leviticus chapter 5, that they had to perform the sin offering. That doesn't mean that they sinned in order to make the sin offering. But it does mean that they had to be purified in that particular way. So that's one way of looking at it, but there's another way of looking at it. So we'll talk about that in a second.
There's lots of situations, and it's useful if you're really interested. Go back and read the parts of Leviticus, right? Go look at every place the word unclean shows up and read the verses. Because there are situations where someone could become unclean doing a compassionate, merciful act. Right? Like, think of the Samaritan.
They had to prepare bodies for burial.
Well, they had to prepare a body for burial. If you touch a dead body, you know, if you're family, there's an exemption. But if you came across a dead person out of Hawaii and no one was there, and you buried them, you became unclean until evening. This is the other part, is that it's a temporary, it's not a sin. It's an uncleanness, which meant you weren't suitable to go to the temple. You weren't suitable to stand before God if you were a priest and offer a sacrifice because you were unclean. You had to be clean. So you really need to understand it's not equal to sin, just exactly as you say.
Yeah. There are certain instances in the Old Testament where we note that someone was made unclean on accident. In fact, it says, if you were made unclean on accident, you accidentally touched a dead body. For instance, someone going through the Nazirite vow in Numbers chapter 6. They were specifically told not to be unclean or make yourself unclean during this time that you are under this Nazirite vow. And they said, well, okay, but you might accidentally become unclean during this time because you might accidentally touch a dead body. And you know, that even included a dead bug. It did. It says a dead creeping thing. And you know, we understand that as a dead bug.
Dead is dead.
So it's again remarkably difficult to stay ritually clean under the Jewish system, which again I thank God for Jesus coming and taking care of that system.
Now, when Jesus touched the unclean, what happened there?
Okay, so he touched the unclean. Now there are two possibilities that I can see happening here. He touched the unclean person, and now Jesus is ritually unclean. So then he would have to go through, you know, I found several different possible rituals that he could have gone through or situations in the New Testament, and they're up on the board here. Leviticus 5, 2, and 3. We discussed that again last Sunday evening about Leviticus, the sin offering. He would have to perform the sin offering. There's another possibility in Leviticus 15, 11. I don't remember exactly that one, so let's turn there. Yeah, go ahead.
And remember the one who has the discharge touches and has not rinsed his hands in water, he shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean until evening.
All right, so this particular ritual he had to do was he had to bathe in water. This was, they were fairly common back then. You could bathe in water and then be unclean until evening. So that was one possibility that Jesus might have had to do. Another possibility is in Leviticus 22. There might be a word or two in there we might not want to read in church, but... but Leviticus 22 verses 4 through 6. I'll read that one. Whatever man of the descendants of Aaron. So this is specifically of a priest, so that we can understand this. Whatever man of the descendants of Aaron who is a leper or has a discharge shall not eat the holy offerings until he is clean. And whoever touches anything made unclean by a corpse or a man who has had an emission, or whoever touches any creeping thing, there we go, there's your bug, any creeping thing by which he would be made unclean, or any person by whom he would be made unclean, whatever his uncleanness may be, the person who has touched any such thing shall be unclean until evening, and he shall not eat the holy offerings unless he washes his body with water. So that's actually similar to what we read in Leviticus 15:11 as well. So looking at those things, there is a possibility that he might have had to make a sacrifice based on what we've read in chapters 15 and 22. I think it's likely that he would have had to wash and then be unclean until evening.
There's chapter 11 as well. Which talks about all the food, all the animals.
Okay.
Running across all the animals. The thing that's important, there are situations where it says you need to go make an offering.
Yeah.
But there's lots and lots of situations that says if you do this, you're unclean until if you do this. And sometimes it just says you're unclean until evening.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't even say you have to wash your clothes. And so, but he says, it even says in the very next verse here, and when the sun goes down, he shall be clean. So, you know, there's no discussion there of anything other than bathing.
Yeah.
You know, he wouldn't have, they may be days walk away from the temple, right? They can't go to the temple and make an offering. They couldn't just make an offering where they were. You know, so that's the thing about uncleanness. God's doing this for a very important reason. The whole notion of uncleanness is to teach him about holiness. That's yes. The big picture. There's an aspect of it that's medical, about not infecting the rest of the community, right? It's actually about medical diagnosis and treatment. Like they'd say, you know, if you have these particular issues with your skin, then you're probably infectious. You know, you need to stay outside the camp. We're going to check you later. But the rest of it's teaching about holiness. And I think the point he just brought up in this verse was, he said he can't eat the holy offerings because he's unclean. If he had done that, he was despising the holiness of God by not paying attention to his own cleanliness. And that would have been a sin.
Now, there's that possibility. Here's another possibility where he would have had to go through the ritual cleansings. Another possibility was he's Jesus. The definition of holy. While a holy thing, something set apart for a holy purpose, could not touch an unclean thing or make something holy, Jesus, on the other hand, does Jesus make us holy when we come into contact with his blood? Yes. When we come into contact with him? He does. So, by definition, could Jesus have made this leper holy, being the Son of God? All right, so, but because of the people around him, you know, he was baptized to fulfill all righteousness. He paid the temple tax so as not to offend people, even though he didn't have to. So it's possible that even if he didn't have to go through the ritual to become clean again, then he went through it anyway. So there is that possibility as well.
The leper also spread the word. I like what Jesus told him. He said, don't tell anybody, and the leper spread the word so that Jesus could study in the city. So Jesus didn't want to, he hadn't proven himself to everybody at this point, and he was wanting to show that he was obeying the law. So he wasn't going to just stand there and say, well, I'm Jesus, I don't have to do it. He led by example. He obeyed the law. He was outside the city for a few days. Then in 2:1, again, he re-entered after some days.
Yes. And that is a point I intend to bring up. There's a couple possibilities there as well. So, all right. And we'll talk about those in a second, given the time that we have. So, he is the definition of holy. And it's also possible that he had cleansed the person before touching him. Or maybe there's and it could have... Who knows? It says he touched him. Hold on, let me turn back there real quick. He touched him and said to him, I'm willing, be cleansed. And as soon as he had spoken, immediately the leprosy left him. So the order of things could have been extremely immediate so that the exact millisecond would be hard to determine what happened first, and perhaps he was made clean before he actually touched him. But, you know, again, that's speculation, and I don't want to speculate too much while I'm up here. All right. So these are, in a sense, uncharted waters. But at the same, because, I mean, how often does Jesus come down, the Son of God come down and do anything? One time during the life of Jesus. All right. So... This man was made immediately cleansed, unlike faith healers of today. And hopefully this will be the last time I talk about that, because we see so many people claim to be healing people, but sometimes they're gradual type things. But almost every time that we see Jesus healing someone, it says it was an immediate healing. There's one exception that I can think of in the book of Mark, but that's an interesting case, and we'll get to that later. I think it's in Mark 8. All right. So Jesus had the ability to completely and totally remove and forgive our sins, keeping in mind that leprosy was symbolic of sin, the uncleanness that people could have, how it festered and how it spread. And Jesus had that ability to remove sin, as we'll definitely see at the beginning of the next chapter as well. This was a dramatic display of his ability. Another dramatic display of his ability. All right. Then he strictly warns the leper, the former leper, not to share this with anyone, and we'll see why later. He says in verse 43 and 44, "And he strictly warned him and sent him away at once, and said to him, see that you say nothing to anyone, but go your way, show yourself to the priest, and offer your cleansing, and offer for your cleansing those things which Moses commanded as a testimony to them." So he was strictly warned not to tell anybody about what he had done. Now, there are a couple reasons, possibilities for that as well, and we'll look at that in just a second, because we see the result in verse 45. So, despite Jesus' apparent defiance of the Levitical law by touching this leper, he still urged the man to be examined by the priest and to be ritually cleansed. This showed that Jesus had a further adherence and respect for the law of Moses. You know, there's a reason why we consider the possibility that even though he might not have to go through the ritual to be clean again, he still probably went through it. There's a reason why we say that, because he did show a very strong respect and adherence for the law. Maybe not for the traditions that built up around the law. We'll definitely see that in the next chapter. And in chapter 3 as well. He healed on the Sabbath. That's not something you're supposed to do, at least according to some people. Alright, so and then Leviticus 14, that's a long, ornate ritual that we won't talk about too much because it's long and ornate. But it's regarding the cleansing. So the leper had to go to the temple and be cleansed in that way. Alright. Now, did the former leper listen to Jesus?
No.
No. He told everyone what Jesus did for him. Now, I have a question. If that happened to you, would you have a hard time keeping it to yourself?
Facebook.
Yeah, we might just put it on there. But still, you know, back then, I mean, even today, though, would you have a hard time keeping that to yourself? I mean, that's a big deal. I've just been cleansed of this leprosy that I've had for who knows how long.
Miraculously and immediately.
Miraculously and immediately. How are you going to keep that to yourself? Well, he was expected to. He was told to keep it to himself. Don't tell other people. Don't spread it around. You know, who knows how long he'd been an outcast. But now he is miraculously able to rejoin society, let alone the physical discomfort that the disease might have given him. So, question, why do you suppose Jesus didn't want him to tell others about this?
Jesus didn't want other people to not accept him. That's why he had to leave town and go out to the desolate places, is because he knew that they'd get upset because he, in effect, committed an infraction against Moses' law, I guess.
All right, and that's a possibility. As I said, I've got two possibilities for why, and we'll see, and that's one that I have here. It's possible that the people perceived him to be unclean, and so he wasn't able to go into the city until he was ritually cleansed. Other gospel accounts don't talk about this, but Matthew 8 does not seem to be in chronological order, and Luke 5 suggests that he withdrew into the wilderness and prayed right after. So it is recorded in Matthew and Luke. Matthew has got a much shorter version of this event, and Luke has a decently long version, about the same as we see in Mark, but at the end he withdraws and prays. The other possibility, and we actually see this in verse 45. However, he went out and began to proclaim it freely, the leper did, former leper, and to spread the matter so that Jesus could no longer openly enter the city but was outside in deserted places, and they came to him from every direction. What is the general theme that we see of chapter 1? We see people coming to him and that he has become very popular at this point. So another possibility is that now that his fame was even greater, that he, this is the first time that we have, at least in Mark, that he has healed a leper, made him clean in that way. There's a possibility that he couldn't move about freely in the cities anymore. Now, we see that he had so many people come upon him before, but even now, I mean, he's healed. He's cast out demons. He's healed my mother-in-law. He's healed this, that, and the other. He's done so many wonderful things. And now he can even cure leprosy. Right. And then they all come in all over the place and say, hey, if I, especially the leper, because then the leper, that might encourage other lepers to come in and try to get cleansed as well. And so that could encourage further, because we know that this particular leper did not exactly obey the Levitical law here, because he came into the city where Jesus was, and now he couldn't, he approached him. These are things that were not done in Levitical law. And so that might encourage people like that to come in as well and cause more people to be unclean, and maybe Jesus didn't want to have anything to do with that. But he waited at the very least for his fame to die down before entering Capernaum again, before entering one of the cities. And we do see that in chapter 2.
So the thing we forget, I think sometimes, you started to get on when people started getting excited about what they're telling you.
Yeah.
But do you imagine that when all these people are coming from everywhere with all of their loved ones who are sick and diseased, that they're all just kind of quietly, you know, reverently walking through the streets and finding where Jesus was?
Yeah.
But they're hollering.
Yeah.
It says at one point, it says his disciples couldn't even sit down to eat. You know, he said he could not eat. He had no peace at all. These people are hollering, and you can see when he goes down the road some of the things we're going to see here. The blind man's going, Son of God, heal us, heal us. These people are shouting and hollering and fighting and pushing to try to get their loved one there.
Yeah.
It's chaos.
And we especially note that in the next chapter, mm-hmm. where they even dig through a roof to do that.
As Sam mentioned earlier, leprosy is analogous to sin. And in verse 45... it talks about, however, he, the leper, went out and began to proclaim freely and to spread the matter. Well, before this, he had been spreading his leprosy. And now that he has been forgiven of his sin by Jesus, he is spreading the matter of Jesus saving,
yeah.
and forgiving. And it's, you know.
Another possibility that I just now thought of. Did he go to the priest to be cleansed, like Jesus told him?
Not immediately. He's in Capernaum.
There's no indication that he did. And so he is spreading the matter to all people. He's still ritually unclean. Even though his leprosy has been cleansed, unless he goes through that ritual in Leviticus 14, he's still ritually unclean. And so it's possibly spreading that ritual uncleanness everywhere. Pardon?
Spreading the matter.
Yeah, spreading the matter. Leprosy is known to spread, and so he now is also spreading the matter in this case.
He's also spreading the word of God, or he's spreading what will eventually be spreading the word of the gospel.
Yeah.
So there's one other reason why Jesus did what he did in telling him not to do it, and I know she didn't have it written up here. It's Isaiah 42. It's one of the prophecies of Christ. Verse 1 and 2. Behold, my servant, with whom I uphold, my elect one, in whom my soul delights. I put my spirit upon him, and he will bring forth justice to the Gentiles. He will not cry out, nor raise his voice, nor cause his voice to be heard in the street. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoking flax he will not quench until he brings forth justice for truth. So there, you know, that's part of the prophecy of Christ. He wasn't going to be going and saying, everybody look at me. You know, he was going to be meek and not, you know, self-promoting. In that sense, and that's part of the reason he tells the other lepers, when the other lepers are cleansed, he tells them the same thing, and that's kind of what he's doing.
So again, lots of different possibilities here. Because of his popularity, he might not want to go into the it'll prevent him from doing all the things that he needs to do, because then he'll be spending all his time healing people. But what was his purpose? Do you remember? Well, in verse 38, what was his purpose? To preach.
Right?
To preach the good news. I mean, we understand that to be the good news, the gospel. He mentions that's mentioned in verse 14 or 15, I think, as well, that he went about preaching the good news of the kingdom, the gospel of the kingdom. So, I think, any other comments or questions about Mark chapter 1. Alright, we have just a few minutes left. And we can talk about chapter 2. We have a new one of those. Alright, so before we get too much into that, let's, we have a new section here. He, chapter 1, at least 16 through 45, talks about Jesus's popularity. He becomes very popular with people, even to the point that he can no longer enter the city anymore. Or perhaps it was because he was ritually unclean. Whatever the case, he was very popular at this time because I mean, wouldn't you be if you suddenly were able to miraculously heal a bunch of people? Yes, and especially have your way prepared like John the Baptist prepared. But now he encounters a bit of friction. And we see chapter 2 through chapter 3, verse 6, he encounters some conflict with some people. Now again, if you remember from our introduction into Mark, some of the early church writers thought that Mark did not write things in order, but these in terms of chronologically. But we do see that they are put together in a particular way so as to say something about Jesus. And in this case, chapter 1 is organized as his popularity. In chapter 2, he encounters some conflict now. And we see that with the scribes and the Pharisees. In chapter 2, actually it says scribes specifically in chapter 2. In Luke's account, it mentions Pharisees. All right, so just as one had broken down the societal barriers to see Jesus, as we saw with the leper, another breaks down physical barriers to see him. So again, chapter 2 details some of the pushback that he sees. He's already broken some of the traditions that are criticized later. If we recall, in chapter 1, he casts out the demon in the synagogue. Well, that was clearly on the Sabbath day. So he's already been healing people on the Sabbath day, performing miracles on the Sabbath day. But it wasn't until somebody comes up and says, oh, you shouldn't do that, a little bit later on. He also broke a tradition by healing Peter's mother-in-law on the Sabbath. Both of these miracles are done on the Sabbath. And then he also touched a leper, not something that that they believe should have been done.
Is there actually a law? Is it written in Leviticus? You'll sin if you touch a leper. I know that a leper is unclean, and if you do touch something unclean accidentally, you have your rituals in vain.
I couldn't find anything specifically that said if you deliberately touch a leper.
He wasn't doing something wrong. He was just doing something that was customarily.
Right, not done. Right.
Right. How does leprosy spread then?
It depends on what kind of leprosy it is. There are different kinds of diseases that could have been that leprosy could have been. Leviticus chapter 13 describes different kinds of things that it could have been: psoriasis, eczema, even smallpox, impetigo, things of that nature.
Leprosy covers a whole category of different
skin diseases. Yeah.
But it also includes what we modern day talk about, which is Hansen's.
Hansen's.
But even then, there are variations. There are contagious stages and non-contagious stages. So it's like, they didn't know all that detail.
Yeah.
They didn't have the microscopes and throw out there with petri dishes.
Right.
You know, even up until the 19th century,
yeah,
lepers were like in Malachi. separated from society because they didn't really understand how it spread.
Yeah, and that's part of it as well. though the ritual uncleanness helped to limit the spread of some of the more contagious varieties.
We actually, not really in comparison, but we do quarantine, you know, we do separate a lot of things, not eczema and all that, but certainly AIDS and
yeah.
That,
because we recognize, we understand how they're spread and we have the concept of germs and microorganisms and how they spread. Some are airborne, some are by touch and, you know, physical contact. And so we try to limit that.
A lot of them are spiritual.
Right, yeah, there's a very big difference.
If somebody's got the flu, they're going to stay home, hopefully.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so now he has caught the attention of the religious authorities. We see that the scribes are talked about in chapter 2 and verse 6, and the Pharisees in Luke 5:21, a recording of the same event here. And they have to come and check him out. You know, and you would kind of expect that, wouldn't you? Oh, we hear about this popular preacher over here in this particular area. Let's let some of the elders and knowledgeable people go and check him out to see how, to see if he's teaching the right thing and see who this guy is. You know, that's an expected thing. You would expect that. And so that's what we have here. The scribes and Pharisees come to check him out. And next week we'll start talking about who the scribes actually were. Any other further comments or questions? All right, very good.